Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our humble podcast. Today, we're looking to cover something that's been a constant companion since the beginning of the missing manual. We are, of course, talking of the fabled Steam Deck. Both Connor and myself have had a little while to test it out, and this is likely to be a kind of a high-end overview with a lot of fangirling. So nestle yourself in, and let's get ourselves going.
Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome back to the Missing Manual podcast. Today, me and Zach are going to be chatting about the wonderful Steam Deck, my man. How are you finding yours? Are you enjoying it? Are you liking it?
I'm smitten with it, mate, already. It's
love.
It's beautiful.
Oh, mate, it's a lovely bit, isn't it? Like, it's genuinely surprised me how much I've enjoyed this. I've been telling a lot of people I've been speaking to about it, and I've been like, you know what? This is probably one of the better kind of tech investments I've made in recent years.
Oh, mate, well, you know, everybody thinks that we're a Capcom shill anyway, right? But like, we should have been earning commission for all of the good things that we've said about the Steam Deck. Honestly, Valve should be giving us backhanders at this point. Everybody I've spoken to, like, I've been at like family barbecues just selling the shit out of this thing, right?
The grind set never stops, man, you know.
It doesn't, mate. Like, when you own your own, you'll understand, right? It's just wow.
When you're part of the club, you know, you will understand. But it is a club that used to be very exclusive, but it is glowing, you know, it's growing very, very short every day because a lot of people are getting their Steam Decks now. It's becoming a lot more out there. Like when it first started, obviously there was a huge rush on Steam Decks. You know, Valve stopped shipping. It was so slow. Orders were delayed, all that kind of business. But now they're really picking up the pace, aren't they?
Yeah, thankfully, anybody that orders one now, they won't have the wait that we did, right?
No, you won't at all. Because I almost waited like
a year.
Yeah, to the day, right, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was I waited a little bit more than a year for mine.
Mm.
It was ridiculous.
It was a long one, yeah. It was honestly like almost a year to the day when I got my email through to purchase it. And that was wild. Like I was looking online, I was looking at the fan trackers, which were quite good actually. Mine was pretty accurate. Yours wasn't very accurate at all.
No, we went for different models though, didn't we?
So, we did go for different models, yes. That's another thing.
Yeah.
I went for the 256 one, I believe, and you went for the 512, right?
I did, yeah. I went for the top end one.
Big boy.
We spared no expense.
So this is interesting because we can chat about the differences between the two. Because I got the 512 version, the 256 version, and it's pretty good. Like, there's not really a lot of difference with the consoles at all. You got a fancier case, didn't you?
Yeah, and the storage as well, my man. Mm. Like,
oh, yeah, the storage, yeah.
Holy hell, right. I mean, like, I filled mine up very quickly.
Mm.
I don't know about you, but
I mean, like, I was cheeky, to be fair, because I went and bought a 512 SD card.
Yeah. Okay.
From,
yeah.
So from Amazon on sale.
I'm looking to do the same, but I'm gonna get myself a terabyte one in Black Friday sales.
Honestly, I was on the fence. I was going to buy a terabyte one, but I didn't do it, and I kind of wish I did. Yeah, terabyte one was on sale for 90 quid.
Yeah.
The 512 was on the sale for like 40 quid. I was like, damn, that's such a good deal.
Yeah, they've got like Amazon Basics ones on there, like you said, for like 90 quid.
And, well, this was a fucking SanDisk one as well, mate. It's proper.
Oh, really? Okay.
It was on one of their Prime Day sales. I got so lucky. I was like, holy shit, this is such a good deal. I need to jump on this immediately. And I had that. And I bought that like 2 weeks before I could even buy my Steam Deck. And I just had it waiting because I was like, you know what? I'm going to buy this and save it because I know for a fact, yeah, this is going to pay off in dividends when I finally get the Steam Deck through.
Yeah. I've had to just, I don't know about you, but like, I've just been hot swapping games. When I get bored of something, I've got to uninstall it and then swap it for something else. And that's been kind of irksome a little bit.
But I have seen people online have sort of using the SD card as almost like a Switch kind of game cartridge system. So what they're doing is they've just got SD cards and they just fill it with games, obviously, and they just kind of use like Switch SD cards would be. You know what I mean? Like, you just put them in, pop them out, it's like a game cartridge, but it's an SD card instead.
Yeah, it's a good way of doing it. Yeah, if you've got like, I don't know, maybe you stick all of your fighting games on one.
That's what I mean,
like,
yeah. If you wanted to, you could do it like that, obviously, like going about and just buying SD cards when you see them on sale, you know, and building like a little collective, maybe like a little collection of SD cards.
Yeah, maybe they could start developing like little third party carry cases, you know, like the you know, back in the Nintendo DS days, where you could put all of your cards into like the little like hard case.
I have seen people online on like the Reddit and stuff do like little 3D printed cases.
Oh, amazing.
Like little 3D printed SD card cases, which is quite cute. And it looks like little cartridges, little Steam cartridges.
Speaking of 3D printing as well, like we've seen people like 3D print their own docks as well, because the obviously the Steam Dock is on its way as well, isn't it?
It is on its way, yeah. Steam Deck. So the dock is a bit weird because the dock, I think it might be going away, and it's one of those things that's kind of, I don't know, it's hard really, because looking at the dock, it's quite cool and Valve have got a good idea for it. But obviously you can just make your own if you had a 3D printer, right? Like people have done, because all they're doing is making that and putting a USB hub in the dock, because that's all the dock is, right? It's just a USB hub with a nice fancy shell.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's all it is. So it's like Valve have already said, you know, they're delaying it a little bit. They're doing a bit more to it. But I don't know. Part of me feels like if they didn't go through with it, it wouldn't really be a loss because, like I said, you can do it yourself. You can just buy a USB hub as well. Like, you can just use that if you want to. It doesn't look pretty, obviously, but it does the job. Same job a dock would do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With the, you know, without charging it, obviously, but still, you know, you're never capable for that, right?
It almost feels like they've got to add something to it to make it a little bit special, to make it worth getting.
Yeah, because it's not very special to begin with. So it's not really a great hit that it's been delayed. I don't know. I'm not sure if Valve are going to go through it or not, because it is something that does already exist. It's just them doing their own version of it, really.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in the kind of the time that I've owned the Steam Deck, even the games that I thought I would probably need a PC for, I haven't really struggled with it too much, because the touchpads are really the touchpad system on it's very, very good.
That's very interesting. And,
you know, there are games like RTSs, like Company of Heroes, the old Dawn of War games, you know, those kind of games. I've just kept them on my current PC anyway.
Yeah.
So what it's done is I've been able to take the lion's share of the games that I had on the PC, clogging up the hard disk on there. I've been able to take those off and kind of redistribute it between the two. So I'm kind of like hybrid working with it a little bit now. So I'm kind of part-time PC, part-time Steam Deck. And that
part-time Decker.
Yeah, and it works wonders for me. I think that's the best way for me to do it. So I'm even toying with the idea of just not bothering with the port at all, to be honest. Like, yeah. I don't really need that, because it's...
Yeah, I mean, you could buy a hub. Like, you could just buy a hub on Amazon, you know, for like 20 quid, and that would do exactly the same job. It just hasn't got a nice shell around it at all, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's like the games that I really wanted to play on the Steam Deck were the ones that I needed that little bit of extra horsepower for, that my current PC just can't really do. And, you know, controller-based games anyway, you know, stuff like the latest Star Wars Battlefront 2, right? I've been playing a lot of that on the deck, and that's worked fantastically. That's been so good.
Yeah.
By comparison to my PC that could barely run it on the lowest settings, and it was just lagging the fuck out every 2 seconds, right?
It's genuinely impressive. Like, I was very impressed. Like, I played the games I could play on it, and one of the first games I installed on it, which is very weird, but I installed Fallout 3 on it, and I've been playing Fallout 3 again, and that's been a joy to like rediscover. I love Fallout 3 deeply. Like, it's one of my favorite Fallout games of all time. I love New Vegas, don't get me wrong, but Fallout 3, It got me into the games.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You know? Yeah,
it was the gateway drug.
Both of our first experiences with the Fallout series, right? Because the first two and Tactics, that was a little bit before our time.
Yeah, they were old, like, you know. I went back and I played them again, but obviously I wasn't there when they came out, right? Whereas Fallout 3 was my first little taste of that world, and it was fucking amazing. And I installed it on the Steam Deck, and at first I was a bit like, "Oh, don't know if it's going to work," because it didn't have the verified Steam Deck verified thing.
Yeah.
It was just playable. So it had issues. So at first I was like, oh God, what's going to happen? Is it going to be playable? Is it going to be okay? Is it going to break? I don't know. And I went through the motions, installed it all. And the only reason it's not verified is because it has the launcher before it launches. And that's it.
And you need to use the touch screen.
You have to use touch screen to do it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the only problem. There's no other problem at all. Oh, and when you make a character, you have to use a keyboard on screen to make your character name. Which, funny enough,
is easy, because all you got to do is hold down the Steam button and press X on the pad.
It is easy when you know, isn't it? Because I didn't know it first. So my character in Fallout 3 at the moment is actually called Player Name. Because I couldn't figure out how to get the keyboard up. I've since done this on other games.
It gives you a tutorial when you boot the game up for the first time as well. Like,
the Steam Deck
actually gives you a tutorial.
I didn't read it. I fucking skipped it. I was like, I fucking want to play Fallout, bro. I'm not reading this text.
That's great. I love that.
Play Fallout 3, man. So my player name is Player Name.
Yeah, that's superb.
Which is quite funny. It's also funny when you get the because I've been playing as like a good character.
Yeah.
And when you get like the talent company go after you, obviously like the fucking bounty notes have like player name on it.
Yeah.
It's like player name, fucking bounty of X amount of caps. And it's like, fucking hell, that's so stupid.
That is dumb, yeah.
But ironically, not a lot of characters actually refer to you by name in the game. So it doesn't really matter in Fallout 3.
Like, well, no, that's the thing, right? That's kind of been a mainstay with the Fallout games in general, right? The only one that it really made a difference in was 4, and that was only for Codsworth, because he had like like several hundred preloaded names that he could use, right?
He did, yeah.
Other than that, it didn't matter a toss.
Yeah, so it doesn't really matter. Like, they'd screw the lone wanderer and stuff like that, right? So, kid from Vault 11, Vault 101.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
So it's not really a problem, but it is funny. I had no idea. Oh, no, I was like, fuck.
I'll be honest with you as well. When you told me that Fallout 3 ran on it as well, I bought it. I bought it for Steam Deck. And I tried it myself.
Yeah,
it still crashes because it's Fallout 3. Like the PC version of Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas are notorious for crashes. Right?
Yeah. The problems the game have is just the problems the game
it's
have.
It's just the game. Not, it's not the deck, is it?
At all? It's not deck that's causing it. Like it's literally just the game is. It's Fallout, it's buggy as fuck.
Yeah, like it's crazy. I've with the rotation of games that I've used on the deck so far, like I've played all sorts on there. Mm. You know, I've like I said, Battlefront 2, I've Fallout 3, I've tried New Vegas on there, Fallout 4 as well. I gave that a little go. That
Fallout 4 really as well. Really?
The Resident Evil 2 and 3 remakes. I've tried both of those.
You played the remix on there as well, yeah.
So the 2 remake is verified. The 3 remake isn't, but it still runs fine.
Ah, okay.
And it's bizarre. I don't know why it isn't verified.
Well, it's usually just because of little iffy bits here and there. Like the actual verification process is very, it's very finicky about kind of what is verified and what's not verified, because games that are playable or games that are even unsupported can still work on the deck completely fine. It's just because something, you know, is weird with it at all, right? Like I've been playing Court of the Lamb on it as well, which is really good, and that's not verified, and that's only not verified because the text doesn't scale very well. So automatically you can just scale it yourself manually in the options, but for it to be verified the game has to do it automatically. Has to know you're playing on a Steam Deck, and it has to automatically adjust the settings itself, basically.
Yeah, like the only kind of like I've only had like a couple of hideous things happen so far. One was it was one of the old AVP games. I tried to run that, and that was like that just refused to run.
Yeah,
it was just
that's gone. Understandable, to be fair.
And then it was actually today it happened to me. I just bought the entire Devil May Cry collection. I've got all of the games on Steam now, and I booted up the HD trilogy collection, you know, the first 3 games, and it's proper funny. Some of the cutscenes are upside down and inverted. So I was like, it's okay, I've watched these before, I don't need to suffer this. They're upside down and inverted. Yeah, it's hilarious.
The gameplay isn't so upside down, is it?
No, the gameplay isn't. It's just the cutscene. Some of the cutscenes. Some of them are fine, but some of them are inverted and upside down.
Which one's this? Sorry, which Devil May Cry is this?
So that was in 1 and 2. So I've played a little bit of 1 and 2 so far. And it happened on both of them, where I had cutscenes that were upside down and inverted. It was so funny.
Quite funny.
Yeah. Which is why now I understand why they're like, it's not verified, right? I imagine they're still trying to find a fix for that.
That's quite funny, yeah.
But the games run fine. They're not a problem when you're actually in the game at all. No problem at all.
That's good. So, I mean, that's what you don't want to have game problems there, right? You want to be able to play the game unhindered as much as possible.
Yeah. You know, like I cutscenes, I'm not too worried. If it's a game that I'd never played before, I'd probably be a little bit more bent out of shape about it. But because they're games that, let's be honest, right, we've been playing for decades now. I've seen the cutscenes hundreds of times. Not really bothered. Don't care.
literally, like you've seen the story is good, to be fair, so it's always nice to watch it again, right?
Yeah, the story is great, nice, but like, I'm there for the hack and slash combos, right, and the. The absolute trailblazing gameplay that it provides.
Fantastic. You're going for a bit of a hack and slash phase, aren't you, at the moment?
I am, yeah. I'm just fresh off of completion of Bayonetta, which I love as well. Bayonetta is such a good game.
Very nice.
Very, very good game. I actually haven't played 2 or 3 yet because they were Nintendo exclusives as well.
And they're going to, 3 when it comes out, is going to be an exclusive as well.
Yeah, I think you can get 2 and 3 on the Switch, though, so I might just have to...
Oh, yeah, no, you can. Yeah, sure,
you can get it on the Switch. Yeah,
I thought you said Steam Deck. I thought you said Steam.
No. Sadly, not on Steam. Unless I wanted to find some kind of dodgy emulator to run it on, which I'd, you know, I don't know. Probably wouldn't work very well.
I mean, to be fair, yeah, no, there are. I mean, this is not us at the Mismania Podcast endorsing emulation or illegal content, but there is quite a lot of Switch emulators for the deck already, which are fairly well rated.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, right? I mean, I've seen stuff where people have been running like 3DS games and shit like that on the deck as well.
It's becoming a bit of an emulation powerhouse, my dude. I'm not going to lie. Like, I've seen many emulator YouTubers and YouTubers in general who are kind of talking more about emulation now because of the Steam Deck has made it really accessible for people, because it's a top tier bit of kit that's been well made and it's very suited for emulation needs.
I mean, it just speaks for like the versatility and the like the how good the price point is for what you can do with this thing, right? It's insane.
The price is good, like, because you don't even have to go for top shelf if you want to, right? You could do the approach I took to it and getting a second tier one and then just buffing it up with more SD cards, right? That's a very doable thing. You don't have to go deep in. The only one I'd consider not getting would be the cheapest one.
Yeah. The budget one, I think you would really struggle with. You would especially because, like, again, like Battlefront 2, that's like nearly 100 gig. That's all of your memory gone in a flash.
Right? Yeah, you'd have to subsidize it with SD cards, but also like the base memory itself is the slower type. Whereas the second two are both the same type. They're just bigger. And SD cards already have been proven to write at that same speed and read at that same speed anyway. So you're not losing anything by subsidizing it with SD cards. But
you
might as well have a bit of a chunkier main drive just for anything else. And also for OS stuff as well, because that's primarily going to be where your OS lives, unless you're, you know, a bit of a hacker man and you like messing around with stuff and you want to move it to another, you know, source.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, I'm about as tech savvy as a pebble, so I didn't get the deck because I wanted to fuck about with it. Like, I got it because it was going to be a handy alternative to me upgrading or buying a new PC, right? So I wanted to get this as an alternative. It means the missus, then she can jump on Sims when she wants to and stuff like that, right? And I'm not in her way then, so like it's a way of me sharing and also not sharing, because the deck is mine. It's definitely mine.
Belongs to you.
It belongs to me.
But yeah, I mean, that's a good thing about this, I think, because at the moment, part of me when I first got it was sort of like, I don't know how much kind of normal people out of this, like people who are really not into kind of the nuances of PC gaming, because this device, as good as it is, it still has some of the nuances that PC gaming has. And by that, I mean, you know, sitting down, making changes to graphics and stuff like that, tweaking bits and bobs to get the game running like just right. Yeah. Like, that's obviously something that console players don't consider and haven't considered, because games on consoles are made for the console and it works on the console. You know, there's no need to mess around with stuff like that. Yeah. Obviously now with like the pro consoles, like the PS5 and the PS4 Pro, they've made it so they've added like new modes that you can change, but that's literally just a setting, right? And it changes everything intelligently behind the scenes. Whereas in PC, obviously you have full control over everything that happens with the game, happens with the device.
Yeah. And I mean, if it's any consolation for anybody that is listening to this podcast that is considering getting it, if I can run it, you can, right? it's very plug and play, very, very easy. And like, even if the game that you're trying to play isn't really set up for like, say, a controller, the amount of user made setups for the controller, the button setups, are they're just brilliant.
Like, and that stuff that's come over from the work they've done to Big Picture as well on Steam desktop.
The user customized layouts are superb. I've done that for a couple of games that didn't really handle that well, and it's fixed it straight away. And you know, if it's this for the sake of a couple of buttons off the back of that, you can just go in and edit them. You can edit them yourself, and it's not a big faff.
It's very easy to make on the kind of on the fly, you know, adjustments to it. And then if you want to get more technical, you can go super technical, right? Because not only do you have the ability to change things in game, you can change core things about the deck itself, can't you? You can change throttle limits, CPU speeds. You can do all sorts of business, man. And it has some of the best and most kind of in-depth analysis, kind of debug information I've seen in a console for a long time. That's not a development kit.
Yeah, like, it's really, really impressive. Yeah. So you've got obviously your three dots button on the right-hand side of the controller. You hit that and that brings up all of your power options, like battery optimization. You can display all of your frames per second and all that on the screen at the same time. You can choose
exactly. You can literally just have just the FPS, or you want to, you can have everything. You can have GPU speeds, CPU speeds, core temperatures, battery life, battery health, everything like that you can put on the screen while you're kind of testing to ensure that things are smooth and, you know, easy going. And once again, like you said, Zach, that is there, but you don't have to use it if you don't want to use it, right?
No. I have to admit, like, I've had a little tit around with it, but I don't use it on the regular. I don't. I kind of trust that my games are, because I haven't had any issues with the games that I've played, really. It's just been a case that I haven't needed to use it, so yeah. I'm cool with that. You know, like I'm playing a mixture of older and newer games, so it's like, I could be playing, I don't know, like Halo Wars 1 minute, and then I'll be playing World War Z the next, and they both run fucking superbly. Like, I can't fault it.
I've not really had any issues trying to get a game to work on this yet, both new and old, which has been fantastic, didn't it? Like, and using it itself, using the device, like having it in my hand, like I've got it in my hand now, just feeling it.
It does feel good, doesn't it? It feels good. Very ergonomic.
Mm. Like, I think that's the key with this. And ironically, I think the key that Valve always nail when they do hardware like this, like the Steam controller, for example, right? It was very out there. It was very avant-garde in its design, right? It was very weird. And a lot of people didn't like that. But for its weirdness, it was a fucking ergonomic controller, right?
Yeah.
And this is an ergonomic bit of kit as well. You've got very nice spacing on the controls. They feel, you know, tight. They feel good, robust. The triggers feel really fucking solid for a handheld device, right?
I think it also depends on the size of your hands as well. For my hands, it sits very well in my hands. I let the missus have a little go. She found her hands are a little bit smaller than mine, and she was struggling to hit the Y button at the top of the.
It do be big, right?
It's a big chunky boy, isn't it?
It's bigger than a Switch, for example.
Yes.
And it's also bigger than the OLED Switch as well, which is the newer Switch, which has a bit of a bigger screen on it.
So it's about, I'd say, probably half again as big as a standard Switch.
It's fairly sizable. It's like, I've got an iPad here. I've got like a, I forgot what iPad this is, iPad Air. I think it's like 12 inches maybe.
Yeah.
And it is longer than the iPad is. It's fairly long. Like, it's about the same size and a little bit longer if you count, like, I guess the sides, not the screen, obviously size, because the sides of the console are quite big. That's where a lot of, I think, the weight comes from, of the side bits, because the actual center profile is quite slim and quite well kind of skimmed down, but the sides are kind of where it's more chunky.
Yeah, and that's obviously to give you better grip more than anything.
Of course, you want to be able to hold on to
it. You need something to hold on to, don't you, at the end of the day? It can't just all be screen.
Exactly, so. It can't be all be screen. But the screen itself is also really fucking good. Like, it's a nice quality screen. Like, it looks good, you know? It's a responsive touchscreen as well. I mean, you're not really buying it for the touchscreen. It's like a phone, you know what I mean? But the touchscreen does the job.
Definitely. Yeah, like, I found it's been... like you said, very useful stuff like those launchers. Yeah. Mm. Instead of having to use your trackpads, you literally just push on the screen. There you go. Done. Sorted.
The trackpads themselves, right? That's another kind of ergonomic feature, isn't it?
Yeah.
But one that is so home with PC games.
It is. Yeah. It's like having two laptop touchpads, right? But each one of them's a button as well. And
it's a throwback to the Steam controller. Definitely.
Yeah. Definitely. And
it's really weird kind of face haptic tracks it had, you know.
Yeah, and it's crazy the level again of customization that you can go into it. Like, you can map menus to the touchpads as well. You know, it's absolutely very, very, very clever.
Yeah, you can fuck around with a lot. Like, you can fuck around a lot with this stuff, right? It's unbelievable. And like it's really nice and refreshing to see Valve's take on the kind of the life, but also what they kind of want this device to do, because they don't care obviously if you do anything with this device, right? You can take it apart, you can fuck around with it, you can put any sorts into it. And some people online have already done that already, right? People have put 1 terabyte internal hard drives. They've done that. You know, they put Windows on it, all that kind of shit, right? And Valve really hasn't batted an eyelid at it at all. And they've kind of been like, you can do that. If you want to do that, we're not going to stop you doing that, you know?
And yeah, it's crazy to see. Like, I mean, and I think we've mentioned this before in previous episodes where we've spoken about the Steam Deck, but it's crazy to see how blasé that they are about their tech. A lot of companies are very protective over their technology and their kind of like IP, aren't they, right? And I imagine, say, like, if you tried to do that with Nintendo, Nintendo would be like, what on earth are you doing?
I mean, why are you trying to dismantle all your... Pretty bigly, yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. If you mess around with stuff like that, right, you know, it's a well-known fact that emulation and ROMs and all that kind of stuff, right, for Nintendo consoles have been a thorn in the Nintendo side for a long time. And they have all come down on people for doing that, right, and for groups for doing that. I think this probably stems, to be honest, from... Valve's upbringing as a PC kind of developer, as a PC entity, right? They understand the need for that customization and that kind of freedom.
They're very open, and they've always held a great kind of relationship with the gamers, right? 100%. With the community, it's been very open. You know, that's why you've got the workshop mods system in place. You know, there was Steam Greenlight before it was the Steam Labs. Yeah,
yeah.
There's always been this emphasis on involving the players. If they want that input, they can have it.
Yeah, 100%, right? Like they've made it so open in regards to that, and also like the iFixit stuff is really good. So if people don't know what iFixit is, it's a website where you can buy official parts and third party parts to fix devices, and they have full, very comprehensive tutorials on there on how to do things. And Valve basically 100% fully partnered with them and made tutorials for them, and then now selling parts to them as well, official Steam Deck parts. So if you want to, you can make any repairs or upgrades to it yourself.
That's awesome.
And obviously this is still, you know, it's quite advanced stuff, but they do a very good job of kind of lowering it and lowering the entry bar to being able to do it yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think even the layman like myself would be able to have a little crack at it? Not that I want to, by the way. In a pinch,
I reckon probably, yeah. I mean, I also personally wouldn't do that. Like, I've built computers before, obviously, but it's a bit of different fish than in taking apart a device of this nature.
It's a compact package, isn't it? You take that apart. There's no guarantee I'd be able to put that together again. Like, not in the same condition anyway.
No, I've always wanted to mod my like Switch Joy-Cons as well, because I've seen people online that do case mods and they look really good. Like people that do the old Game Boy purple color.
Oh, amazing.
Like the see-through purple, the atomic purple. They do that for Switch controllers and consoles. So I've always wanted to do that. But like watching the videos on it, it just looks like a fucking nightmare to take apart and to put together. And I'm just like, I don't think I need that stress, man, you know? But I reckon if I had to, like if I really fucking had to, I reckon I could probably give it a good shot.
Yeah.
But Valve have opened a official repair shop for it as well. So if you have your Steam Deck and it's still within warranty, you can just send it to them and they will fix it. And if it's not in warranty, they will fix it as well. But you can pay a charge if you want to for that.
Yeah, that's good. That is really, really good. It's
a fantastic quality like service, you know, because that at the end of the day, people are going to want that. And also in the future, you know, whatever Valve are planning, obviously we've already started seeing people discussing what's going to be next. Steam Deck 2, Steam Deck 1.5, you know what I mean? Is it like an OLED upgrade, that kind of jazz, right? And at that point, people are going to maybe want to start doing things with themselves, you know? And also, it remains to be seen how Valve are going to handle it when that happens as well, you know? Are they going to let people upgrade their decks for free? Are you going to send it in and get an upgrade? I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if that's the case, that would be really, really good. And I think that's definitely something that Valve would do, if I'm being honest with you. Like their attitude towards it has always been really good, you know.
But they do a new screen. I don't know if they do a new screen. They sell the screen. You can fit the screen yourself, or you can send it in and they fit the screen for you, right?
For a premium charge or something.
For a price, obviously, yeah. You have to pay for it. But for a regard, you're getting them doing it, right? You're getting them doing it for you. And and it would potentially be cheaper than buying a whole new console, for example. Like when the OLED Switch came out, right? Not a lot of the internals really got changed, apart from the battery and the screen.
Yeah.
So if we see an upgrade like that for the Steam Deck, it would be nice if that service was offered, because like I've got an old Switch here and it's really good. I don't really feel the need to get an OLED Switch because it's not a performance upgrade. It's literally just a nice looking screen and a better battery. That's it, right?
Yeah. It's I suppose it's one of those things where they don't, you know, you don't always need to upgrade, do you?
Not really, no.
It's nice, but it's not mandatory, and it's not.
And also, while people have been talking about this, right, this is purely hearsay, right? The Switch as deck has only really just come out. It's finally getting released in Asia, actually, so in the Asian countries. So it's coming in Japan and Korea, China. Those countries are getting official launches for the deck. And obviously, it's now, you know, all over Europe, it's all over America. So it's still in the process of rolling out everywhere, right? So it's not, I don't think it's the right time to be being like, oh, what's coming next or anything like that, right?
Because yeah, it's not even at its peak yet, is it?
It's not even at its peak at all.
And meteoric rise, I would say.
Oh, 100%, yeah. It's getting bigger now because more people are accessing it and getting hold of it, you know? Whereas, like we said at the start, it was a bit of a gentleman's club to start with, right? You had to be one of the first through the door to get hold of it when it first came out, right?
Yeah. I felt like a jealous child watching through the window while all the kids, you know, while all the kids were playing with the toys.
It's like the SpongeBob meme.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I was like, one day it'll be mine.
Soon, man. But it has been an absolute joy to use. Like, it has been one of definitely the best kind of purchases I've made in recent time. And unfortunately, it has totally replaced my Switch at the moment. I can't lie.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it will continue for me because a lot of the time I played my Switch on the go. I used to use it for kind of trains and all that kind of stuff. But now I reach for the deck, not for the Switch, you know?
Yeah.
And I definitely will still play Switch again because there are obviously exclusives, right? And that's going to be Nintendo's big thing. There's going to be games that you're only going to be able to get on Switch, right? They're not going to release Pokemon on the Steam Deck, right? Officially, once again, not endorsing emulators, but officially, you know, Zelda, Mario, right? These games, these titles will not come officially to a Steam Deck. It just won't happen, right? So the Switch obviously still fulfills a purpose. The Switch obviously also stills a bigger purpose because it's multiplayer, out the box multiplayer is what I mean.
Yes.
Whereas the Steam Deck is more of an isolated self experience, right? Like, you can use it online and whatnot, play with your friends and stuff. But what makes the Steam so great is, out of the box, two people can play it in the same house. You know, it's true local multiplayer.
Nintendo seem to be one of the it's like a last chance saloon for couch co-op, isn't it?
The Nintendo. I mean, yeah, they're the ones still proudly flying the couch co-op flag, mate. Like, without them, right, there wouldn't really be any manufacturer that's making it out of the box, right? That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm getting at. Obviously, you can play a multiplayer local with PS5, new Xbox, whatever, but they do it out of the box, right? It's like buying a PS2 back in the day and getting true controllers of it. That's what it's like, right? Like being able to play with your mate instantly.
Those were the days, mate.
You know, and go back and listen to our three-part PS2 series all about that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
A lot of good memories in that series.
It's been a weird kind of juxtaposition, really, because obviously I've been playing with the Steam Deck, but then I've also dusted off the DS Lite and I've been playing on that.
The DS Lite, what the fuck is wrong with me?
What do you mean? What's wrong with me?
But like the DS Lite,
you know. But that's the thing. Sometimes you get a bit of a hankering to go back and play some older games, right?
It's true. You're not wrong.
I've had a little taste for like Yu-Gi-Oh and stuff like that. So obviously a lot of the Yu-Gi-Oh games I have are on the either like the Game Boy Advanced or DS, right? So I just run it on the DS Lite.
I did have a lime green DS Lite and I loved it dearly. Honestly,
I've got a red one. Lipstick red,
lime green.
Yeah, very cool.
Mate, honestly, it was. Oh, I loved it. I loved my DS Lite. It was such a good time. I used to play it all the time. I used to take it on a holiday with me, play with my cousins all the time.
Honestly, it is the ultimate travel console for me.
It's a big handheld, mate. It's a massive.
It's great. Yeah, like I still take mine everywhere with me. You know, if I'm going on holiday, I still take it with me because it's just. like if I'm on a train or on the bus or something, it's just easy to just put it on and play, right? And just,
yeah.
I don't know, I'll play a few rounds of Yu-Gi-Oh! Or something like that and then stick it in my bag, forget about it. If I lose it, whatever, you know, it's it's old.
The good thing is, right, you ain't going to be losing fucking the Steam Deck, mate, because it's so chunky, right? I feel like it's impossible to lose it.
See, me, I'm kind of scared. I don't want to leave the house with it at the moment.
No, you don't.
It sounds daft, right? Because it's a portable console. You should take it places with you, right? But I'm also a little bit like it's like my tech. It's like my technological child at the moment.
Tech child.
I'm protecting it with my very life.
Fuck, man.
After I've had it for a while, maybe I'll be a little bit more kind of brazen with it and blasé. But up until that point, I'm very protective over it, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to. Break it.
I was the same for sure, man. I mean, I only ever really use it in my house or on like a train, or when I'm visiting somewhere. Like I took it obviously when I went and visited my family like a few months ago in August, my birthday. I took it back then, obviously, and got a lot of use out of it then, which was great because it meant like it's kind of I could take my whole PC library with me without taking my PC with me, which was fucking ace.
It was cool, right? Obviously that was when you brought that was obviously the first time I gave it. I had a go with it.
Yeah, as well, you had a little spin, didn't you?
That was really cool, and it was definitely cool to try before you buy. Let me know what I was in store for.
I think it's good because I would have loved to have had a little go on it before it came, because I had obviously watched so many videos on it and stuff like that, right? But it doesn't really prepare you for getting it and holding it in your own hands. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, definitely.
And getting a feel for the size and the weight, because like I said, that is something that did take me off when I first got it, because I was like, oh okay, it is a bit of a big boy, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
in comparison to a Switch, it took a little bit of getting used to. So, yeah, I would have loved to have been able to get my hands on it just a little bit early.
But, like, nothing can prepare you for that moment when you boot up for the first time and you get that little, like, jingle.
Yeah.
And then the operating system comes up. Oh, man, it's so good. It's so, so good.
But the operating system itself as well deserves a little mark of respect, I think, because they've done really fucking good with that.
Very like, praiseworthy.
Yeah, it works really well. It's very clean. It's very tidy. And I think most importantly, it does a good job of hiding stuff that like non kind of intense kind of gamers and tinkerers are going to want to see.
Yeah.
Like if you want to see that, you can go into it. But if you don't want to see that, you don't have to see that. And it's all kind of hidden. It's all nicely laid out. And I've actually heard that Valve are planning on getting rid of Steam Big Picture at the moment, how it is, and replacing it with the Steam Deck OS.
But I think it's a great idea because the Steam Deck, you know, the kind of operating system that they're running with at the moment, it is just a better version of Big Picture.
Of Big Picture, I can see. When I heard that, I was like, that makes it's a no-brainer. Like, they might as well get rid of the current UI and replace it with that UI because it works so much better, right? So if you're doing Steam Big Picture regularly on your PC, you're in for a treat as well because you'll get to experience the OS and the OS kind of layout without getting a Steam Deck, which is nice.
Yeah, which in a way is almost a little bit of a try before you buy in that sense.
Yeah, in the sense, you get to try the software before you get the hardware.
Yeah, absolutely.
But like you said, it works so much better than the normal Big Picture mode.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And I also think as well, it's quite praiseworthy as well for the kind of the seamless transition between desktop mode and the gaming mode as well. I think that's very good. That's very, very easy to do.
I was going to say, how is that? Because, I've not really dived into to the desktop mode too much myself. I've had a little play, but I've not really gone too in depth with it.
Yeah, so I myself haven't done too much either, but I had to do that, say for instance, like when I was installing Discord, like I was telling you about that, wasn't I? So like to use Discord in the gaming mode, I had to go into the desktop mode. I had to download it as an app, sign in and all that good stuff, and then I had to boot up Steam on the desktop mode, set Discord up as a non-Steam application, and then go back into gaming mode and load it up through that. So it sounds a little bit more complicated than it actually was. It was quite simple. What that allows me to do then is that I can boot it up as an application through the gaming mode, go back to the library, and then just boot another game up, and then I'm running Discord in the background, and you can seamlessly transition between the two with no issues.
That's pretty good, to be fair. Like, the fact you can just jump between the two as well, easily, that's super nice to see, because it makes it so much easier, right, doesn't it, to access that desktop mode and get a little bit more at your device, because that's where it becomes less of a handheld, more of an actual PC, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And the only thing with that is that I had to manually set up the keys myself, because there were no, like with the games, there are community made layouts for the games to make it easier. You can just literally plug and play with those. With Discord, because it's a non-Steam application, there's no community layout, so I had to map that myself. But again, it's a lot of it's just use the touchpads. Map it so when you click, it's like a left or a right mouse click. Mm. It's really like I said earlier on, if I can do it, you can do it. Really simple.
That's a Zach promise.
Yeah, that's the Zach seal of approval. That is,
if I could do it, you could do it too.
Tech Dunce seal of approval, right there.
The missing manual Tech Dunce award. That's 2022 it, yeah. Goes to the Steam Deck for its fantastic usability.
I guarantee you, I will be the winner of that contest every year for the duration of the podcast running.
But on the whole, it is a fantastic little kit. Like, I would wholeheartedly recommend anyone out there who's interested in maybe getting one to just put down a deposit for it, because it's very easy. Like we said in our original episode, way back in episode 3, I think it was. And when we spoke about the deck since, we always said that it's a very easy thing to kind of secure your place. Like, you just literally pay like a £4 deposit, I think it is, isn't it?
And it's something like that, yeah.
And if you want it, when your time comes, you buy it and it's £4 cheaper, and you've obviously got your copy. If you don't, then they just refund you the £4. Like, I don't see a lose situation here, right? I think it's a no-brainer, you know?
I totally agree. And I think it really does bridge the gap between PC, console, and handheld console. It covers all three bases. And it's like I've spoken to friends about it, and I think there are a couple of those are they're definitely veering towards the Steam Deck because it allows them to play PC games with us, and it's with the introduction of crossplay, that obviously makes things certain games easier. But there are games that you just flat out can't get on console that you can get on PC, right? So it's just there's just a lot more customization, a lot more versatility, and there's a lot more options with this than I think with a lot of the other consoles that are around at the moment.
Mm. Like you said, you said it blurs that line between console, between PC, between handheld, and I think, like I said before, and I echo this again because it is so true. The Steam Deck is very much it's very much the sole conclusion of all of Valve's years of work on the little things they've done. The controller, the Steam Machine stuff, you know, all that's the big picture mode, and the streaming thing they did a little while ago as well. All that kind of stuff has come together, and that's why we now have this, right? You can see every little bit of that work in this console.
Yeah, my analogy of the Steam Deck, and it's part of my kind of sales pitch for it, is that this is the lemonade after all the lemons that Valve has given us, right? Because their hardware, it has kind of flopped a little bit, hasn't it, in the past. They've bless them, they've done some really good stuff with it, but they have ended up being lemons, and this is the lemonade at the end of that, right?
Yeah, this is the sole work of a lot of years of kind of R&D, of research, of seeing, you know, throwing things at the wall, right, and seeing what sticks. So I think that's a really good analogy. You know, the lemons have come, but this is now the lemonade.
Yeah. And it's cool and refreshing.
Oh, man. I can understand why you were so good at starting lawnmowers now.
Ice to the Eskimos, mate. Ice to the Eskimos.
Gift to the gab. The smooth Dorset tones.
Yeah.
But on the whole, yeah, like, honestly, I can't say too much about this. So we're probably going to pivot everyone to a little bit of small news. But, you know, in the future, right, the Steam Deck is always, I think, going to remain a very big part of the podcast, and that, you know, whenever we talk about games in the future, and if they're coming on PC, I think we'd definitely note a little bit of kind of little wink, wink, nudge, nudge about the Steam Deck. You know, you can play this on the Steam Deck too, and how cool would it be to play that game on the deck, right? That kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, but I think this is kind of we've almost come a little bit full circle with this episode, because this will be, I imagine, the last big kind of segment that we'll have on the Steam Deck now from now on.
On its own, I don't think we're going to cover this again in as much detail. Like I said, I think we're going to keep it in our minds, and when we you know, review something when we talk about a new game, right? If it comes out on PC, automatically we can be like, oh yeah, look at that, you know, it's coming out on Steam Deck as well. How cool is that? And it obviously opens up a lot of new PC games to like a new way of playing them as well. I think indie games, for example, are going to get so much out of this device, because I used to use my Switch for so many indie games, right? So many indie games.
Yeah.
And ironically, those indie games, a lot of them started out life on Steam. You know,
yes.
Games like Hades, for example, right? That game started on Steam. It was a Steam early access title before it even released to any console, and before it became a global, worldwide selling game, right? It started on Steam. You know, so many games like that. Burning Isaac, for example, as well. So many fantastic indie games cut their teeth on Steam. And, you know, if you wanted to experience them in a handheld environment, all you could do was wait until they came on Switch. But now you can actually try them out on a handheld as they come out, early access.
Just cutting out that middleman at the end of the day, aren't you?
Exactly. It's a lot more effective, a lot more efficient as well for the end user. So you're getting a better time out of it as well. And
imagine you'll pay less as well, because the Steam sales are always really good.
Well, I mean, this is another thing, right? Like, I think this is a device that if you already have a Steam account and you already have a lot of Steam games and you already want a handheld experience, it's a no-brainer device, because you're going to get so much out of it. Right?
Yeah.
If you've already got a Steam library that's huge, you've already got games you can play on this, right? You know, I've got a fairly sizable Steam library, and a good quarter or good half of that are all fully playable Steam Deck games.
Yeah.
Out of the box, right? And the other ones aren't fully playable, but are probably fully playable, right? As we talked about earlier, even if it says it's not playable, there's a good chance it probably is playable still.
Yeah. Absolutely, mate. Yeah.
But yeah. The Steam Deck, the humble Steam Deck in all its glory. And unfortunately now, Zach, we're gonna talk about a bit of news.
That's absolutely fine. So you know what time it is? It's time for newsreel.
It's time for an improv newsreel.
That's my budget one, just so you don't have to...
Budget newsreel.
There you go, sorted.
Welcome to budget newsreel.
Mini newsreel.
Mini newsreel.
It's going to be the mini newsreel.
Like a newsflash.
Newsflash.
Newsflash. Newsreel newsflash. So basically, more games. More games have been announced. There was quite a small Nintendo State of Play the other day. Nintendo Direct the other day. And a Sony State of Play the other day, which has dropped a lot of new interesting stuff. A lot of stuff we already knew about, to be fair. No Silent Hill, basically, which is why I didn't feel obliged to cover it.
Boo.
I know, right? Very, very sad. There was some massive Yakuza news, though. Very happy about that, because I fucking love the Yakuza games.
Do tell.
The Judgment series, which is a spin-off, Judgment and Lost Judgment, they're both coming to Steam, so you can play those. There's like a spin-off of the Yakuza series. And then a very cool game called Yakuza Ishin, is now being called Like a Dragon Ishin, like Yakuza Like a Dragon that came out last year.
Okay,
yeah. Finally getting a Western release, which is massive, because it was one of the only mainline titles that was only in the East. It never got a Western release. So it's very cool to see that game finally coming out into the West. And Western players still get a chance to play it.
As a little segue, I'm still super salty that there are so many games out there that we as a Western audience have no access to. I feel sad about this. Sad. And enraged.
Yeah, Ishin was one of those. And it was a really unique game in the Yakuza series as well, because it takes the game back into like feudal Japan times. So like back in the feudal Japan instead of modern Japan, with characters that are sort of real life characters actually, but also related to the characters from the other games.
So
they get to use their likeness again, but in a new story, which is super cool. And it's set in a really good kind of time period as well. And ironically, there was another game that came out that got announced at the PlayStation event called Rise of the Ronin. You seen that?
I haven't, no.
So this Rise of the Ronin is being made by Team Ninja, the guys that made Ninja Gaiden.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
And it's their new game, and it's an open-world RPG type thing, and it's set in feudal Japan, a la Ghost of Tsushima style, but it's set at that pivotal turning point when Japan became more Western and more open.
Ah, okay, so like The Last Samurai.
Mm, exactly, yeah.
It's good film, by the way.
Fantastic film, yeah. So it's set during that period of time when the kind of the age of a samurai is dying and is ending, and modern life is starting to come to Japan. You know, modern stuff, trade in the West has opened up. You know, they've moved more towards concrete and brick buildings rather than having wood and lacquered fitted buildings.
Muskets.
Muskets, yeah. Guns and stuff like black powder. It's that kind of... that is basically happening in this game. And the trailer looks fantastic. It looks really fucking good. Yeah, super good. Yeah, it's set in the late 19th century, basically, as it's kind of coming together between the Tokugawa shogunate and the anti-shogunate faction, so the Imperial Japan. So a difference between Imperial and shogunate, that kind of whole time period, which is super interesting if you're into your history.
Yeah, that sounds really good, to be fair.
It looks really nice. Release date, I think it's actually a little bit far off. It's either next year or it could even be further potentially, but the trailer looks really nice. So, you know, do yourself a favor and give it a look. Team Ninja are really good. Great company. The Ninja Gaiden series, if you've ever played it, obviously is a legendary series. And also a very fucking hard series as well.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've played like Ninja Gaiden or like Ninja Gaiden Black or anything like that.
No, Xbox, I haven't. But
fuck me, man. Those games were tough. Proper tough games.
Yeah, I have to admit, would you recommend it, though?
Ninja Gaiden?
Yeah.
Maybe. It's hard. Maybe. Like, Ninja Gaiden, it's a really weird game because also it's kind of laid out quite weirdly as well because it's a bit kind of arcadey, really.
Okay.
It's hard to describe.
Dark Souls and Bloodborne's hard, but they're still good games, right?
So. Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, totally. It's sort of like that, I guess, but it's not Soulsborne at all. It's very much like arcadey, sort of low-key RPG type thing.
Yeah.
That's the best I can describe it. Honestly, it's a bit difficult. I can't lie.
Yeah.
So that happened yesterday. That was quite cool. And there was also some other stuff we already know about as well, like the new God of War. That got a new trailer, which was fucking hype. I'm not going to lie. Sadly, unable to play that because it's going to be a PS5 exclusive for a while. But it will eventually come to PC. Because the old one, is on PC and playable now. And apparently plays really well on Steam Deck also.
Not
only that, Spider-Man. But the Spider-Man PS5 game is on Steam now as well. And that's Steam Deck verified.
Yeah. And how about the... have you seen any of the stuff about the Assassin's Creed?
Oh, man, yes.
That was popping off the other day. I was like, holy shit, yes, dude, that looks great.
There was a lot of Assassin's Creed announcements as well. Ubisoft were dropping big, big knowledge bombs. So there's a mobile game coming. There's a Netflix series coming. There's a game set in Japan/China. I don't know. I've read weird stuff online. Some people online are saying Japan, but some people are saying China. So I don't know exact locations, but
we'll have to check with our sources with that one.
But there is an Assassin's Creed set in kind of that area of the world, and there's also going to be one called like Hex, which looks like some fucking witchcraft, almost horror-esque Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, like wow, they are by the looks of it, and from what I read as well, they're looking to step away from that kind of like RPG open world kind of formula that they've had for a long time.
That's the madness, right? Because there's another one coming out that is also meant to be more like the traditional one.
Yeah.
It's fucking insane, honestly. Yeah. You've got Codename Red, which is the East kind of Asian styled one.
Yeah.
You've got Codename Jade, which I think is the multiplayer one. No, the mobile one. That's the one. I think Codename Jade is the Chinese one, and that's going to be a mobile game. And Codename Red is a Japanese one. That's going to be a mainline game. And that's going to go along with the Hex one, which is...
I'm trying to think now. Is it Odyssey? Is that one of the new ones as well?
That's the other one they did before Valhalla. That was the Greek one.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. That's the Egyptian one, isn't it?
Yeah. So they announced they were doing one last DLC for Valhalla, which was the Viking one, which got fairly good reviews. I've not played it, honestly.
Yeah. No, it's not the Egyptian one, is it? I think it's Greek. Greek.
Valhalla.
No, the Odyssey.
Oh, yeah, Odyssey is Greek.
I think it's Greek, isn't it? Yeah.
Odyssey's like Greek, Greco.
I think Origins is. Yeah, there's so many of them now. It gets very confusing, doesn't it?
There is a staggering amount of Assassin's Creed games.
And to be fair, I still haven't finished Brotherhood.
Oh my God, my man. What in the world are you doing? You're missing out, mate, because the original trilogy is the best.
I've just got other games to play. I just haven't got around to it, man. I have up to like Black Flag for PlayStation 3.
I haven't
got around to playing them, man.
I'm not going to go into it because I think Assassin's Creed deserves its own time.
Maybe it will give me a bit of a rocket up the arse to actually play them then because we're actually going to cover them on the podcast.
Up to Black Flag, I think they are fantastic games, but I lost touch of them very heavily after that.
Yeah, and there was the French Revolution one, wasn't there?
I played Infinite. I played up to Syndicate, actually, which is the one set in Britain.
Yeah, that one looks interesting because you had the brother and the sister, right?
Sister
and
characters, yeah.
He was more stealthy and he was like a big brute, wasn't he?
But it just started to go off in a bit of a direction and I just didn't gel with it. Like, Black Flag was the last one I really loved. And I loved
They started becoming yearly releases as well, didn't they? Which
they started to, like,
took a nosedive quality-wise, didn't it? Yeah.
Which, to be fair, is sort of what they've alleviated here because they're showing what, like, is coming in the future. But they've had this in the background for a while. There's not really been a big release for a little bit of time. Though we had Valhalla, obviously. But they're kind of pacing it a little bit because in 2023, they're going to do another one called Mirage, which I think is going to link up with the Egyptian one.
Potentially. Oh, okay.
And that one they've described as being like a very traditional Assassin's Creed experience.
Yeah.
So honestly, I'm not sure what to make of it, man. I'm going to keep my eyes open, of course. Like the Japanese one, Code Name Red, looks interesting because Ghost of Tsushima, for example, was super good. And that was sort of like Assassin's Creed in Japan. Especially if you played the ghost side of the game and you play as a stealth character. Not so much on the mobile one, but I'll take a look, obviously. And the Hex one sounds quite good. Because the trailer made it look a bit like a horror game. A little creepy.
That's quite interesting. Thing. Yeah.
It's like a Blair Witch style deal.
Yeah, it's always nice when you... Because I imagine if it's an Assassin's Creed game, right, then it's going to be... You're gonna be the stalker, right? Mm. So kind of interesting playing the horror angle, but you're on the...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying directly horror, right?
Scary side.
It's just got like kind of very witchcrafty vibes, very... foresty, very kind of dark.
Yeah, it's like horror themes rather than it actually being a horror game.
Not horror per se, but it bleeds horror themes for sure. So that was a huge announcement. And to be honest, that's kind of already cool from Ubisoft because I must admit, I'm not a huge Ubisoft kind of player these days. They don't really have a lot that I still play. Like, I don't really play Far Cry very much. I don't play Assassin's Creed at all anymore. But the nature of the announcements did catch my eye. I can't lie. I was curious to see what was going on.
I think because they did the Rainbow Six games as well, didn't they, Ubisoft?
Yeah, they did Legion, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, like the Vegas ones were my favourites.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that was fun.
That was the last, like, I think that was the last Ubisoft game that I was like, man, I really, really fucking like this.
That was a long time ago, man.
But yeah, it was a long time ago, right? So,
This was a long time ago, buddy.
Look, man, I'm out of touch, all right?
I thought you could start singing, then.
Just let me be old, okay?
and moving away from that, I guess, we've now all got a massive gaming event that's happening over the next week, and that's the Tokyo Game Show, which is huge.
Yes.
And I always forget about this one because it kind of creeps up. It's towards the end of the year, and it's one of like the last kind of big gaming shows before we kind of go towards the gaming awards, which are subjective if it's an announcement show or an award show. That's a debate for another day. But the Tokyo Game Show is one of the like peak kind of announcements, especially for Japanese and Asian developers. There's a lot of like Asian studios that are shown off at Tokyo Game Show. So there's a lot of nice stuff to come if you're a fan of your RPGs, fan of JRPGs in particular. Capcom have already shown off Resident Evil stuff. You know, we've got to talk about that.
Yeah. You said you mentioned about the remake of 4 is going to be released on a lot of platforms, including some of the older consoles right?
Yes, there was a concern that the new 4 remake wouldn't be making it to PS4 and the older generation, but they did confirm today that it is coming to the older generation as well as the new generation, which is fantastic to see.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
As well as PC, of course. So Steam Decks, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I mean, if you've still got your PlayStation 4 and you're not keen to pay that extortionate price for the PlayStation 5, I mean just don't worry about it.
Resident Evil 4 on console, to be honest with you, man. Like just to purchase the game on console now is getting mighty expensive.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
Another bonus of, I guess, PC games is they are still cheap and they are still holding their kind of cheap price as well, which is nice. With the exceptions of games like FIFA and stuff like that, but it's like you're paying for the license at that point.
Yeah. It's and again, they're never games I've really been ever that bothered about. But if you enjoy them, all power to you.
Mm. And of course. Actually, before I talk about that, I will say they are doing their own Resident Evil showcase as well. That's happening soon.
That's interesting.
Potentially next month. I did watch a bit of the trailer, and the dude in the trailer did say that it was, I think, next month or in a few weeks, potentially, that they're doing a more in-depth just Resident Evil-like showcase.
Very good. Yeah. Maybe Reverse will come out.
I mean, potentially, we'll finally see that game out. I'm hoping for some nice RE4 gameplay at that one.
Yes, yeah, me too.
Because we haven't had gameplay yet, and we didn't have any gameplay again today either. We just had a confirmation that it was being devved, but they did say that they could show more soon. So I'm hoping to see maybe some cool RE4, RV engine, Leon-looking, older, more grizzled.
Yeah, they won't disappoint.
No, I'm looking forward to that for sure, man.
Yeah,
I've got high expectations for that game because it's. I mean, we spoke it before. It's got to be good. It's got to be good.
It has to. Yeah, this is the crunch time now for them. Mm. It's got to be cock on,
and cock on.
It has to be cock on because the eyes of the world are watching. Mm.
And they also, to be fair, they also talk about Village as well, which is nice, and they were just describing kind of the challenge and tribulations they've had with getting Village playable for a person. Because obviously we spoke about this last time, right? But the DLC is coming out. It's going to allow you to then play the base game again, completely third person, which is quite interesting. And actually, I'm going to try it out because I'm very curious to see how they've done it. And it looks quite cool showing off the kind of behind-the-scenes stuff they showed for it and kind of things they've had to adapt to and change to make it work a bit better. With the third-person camera. It'd be interesting to see. And also, I want to see the Benefit of House, man. I want to see what's going on with that in third-person.
Yeah, very cool.
Because I just don't believe, right, that it's going to be as scary of third-person as it is in first-person.
I mean, giant fetus baby is always going to be...
It's just the atmosphere, that's always going to be scary. Like, having it in first-person, having no way to kind of cheat corners... And having to face it, you know what I mean? Like that is.
I feel like even with Resident Evil 2 Remake, for instance, though, that's still. I was playing the other day, and I nearly fucking dropped my deck. Like, it was actually like, it shit me up. Them fucking zombies, man. Like, it doesn't matter if you're in third or first person. That, because the camera's quite tight on the character anyway, you don't really get the chance to cheese corners that much anyway. It's very claustrophobic anyway, right? Yeah. So if they just follow the formula that they've already used and it's already been successful in that regard, I don't reckon it'll disappoint you, mate. I reckon the atmosphere will be retained and I think the experience will be just as terrifying as it was the first time. So bring adult nappies, you know?
I'll definitely bring your adult nappies because hot damn, hot diggity. It's going to be a creepy one. And finally, probably just to round off before I get, you know, aggressive, angry, and start going on a rant again. But obviously, Tokyo Game Show means something else. And it means, ladies and gentlemen, Silent Hill. Are we going to get it again?
Maybe.
Are we going to get a new Silent Hill announcement? Because this is, if there's anywhere, if there's any game show, if there's any time, Tokyo Game Show would make a lot of sense. Would make a lot of sense. That's what I'm saying.
Now, right?
Come on. Don't disappoint us, Konami. I beg you.
Yeah.
I plead. I want to see something tangible. Please.
Well, I mean, we're going to have to keep our ears to the ground then. We're going to have to watch this Tokyo Game Show and we'll never know. There might be a newsreel in the near future.
If it happens, yo, we'll be the first here because I will be firing up the recording immediately. And going on one because hot damn right, it has to be discussed immediately. I cannot
call an emergency meeting.
No, emergency broadcast will be called. Emergency broadcast network, you know. Silent Hill has been announced. Hot damn. Because we have, you know, like we said, there's apparently two games in development. I don't know if it's like really real. No one knows if it's real or not, right? There's the one which is a new game and the second one, which apparently is a remake of the second one. Being done by the guys on Blooper Team, the guys that do Layers of Fear. So I don't know, man. I'm hoping it's real because it'd be fucking cool to see it. And to be honest, if that leak was to be believed, the one we saw last a few months ago now, wasn't it?
Yes,
That looks quite interesting. British Silent Hill.
Yeah, it's English. It's certainly a different direction to take it in, right? It's quite ballsy. So
English Hill.
Notting Hill.
Old Blighty edition.
Yeah.
On the hills that do be silent.
The hills that do be silent.
That's my favourite thing at the moment. I'm not going to lie. I discovered a YouTuber recently. I think his name is like Totally Pointless TV or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
And he started off doing a lot of really weird videos, but recently he's really found his stride, and he's been doing long-form analytical horror game reviews.
Nice.
And I've been loving them. And he's done a few on Silent Hill, and he said that in one of his videos, that got me really good. Them hills that do be silent.
That's great.
It's just stupid saying, but fuck, man. Proper good.
That's it. That's a new bio for you, I think.
Them hills that do be silent. That might change the bio.
100%.
I've been needing a new one for a while, so maybe it's finally presenting itself to me. But if it is real, though, you know, I'm all for it because the images look cool. The images look fun, you know. Or we double down once again because Yuma comes over, explains it all to us.
Oh, mate, you're... Do you know what? I hope that Kojima does it for you. I can't bear to see that disappointed little face. It just breaks my heart, mate.
Honestly, bro, if Kojima came back, mate, I would probably shed tears. If he came back and said that it's happening, PT's happening, you probably would see a tear from my eye, mate. You probably would. Because for the longest time, mate, I even did my dissertation at university, bro, on PT, right? It's the level I'm at here, yeah.
Yeah.
I did my fucking dissertation, mate, on PT and how it influenced horror games going forward, yeah? And how it influenced all sorts of horror games. Resident 7, for example, right?
Yeah.
Huge influence for them. Other games that have happened since then, so many of them. Alison Road, that indie game. There was another one a little while ago as well. I think his name was Vestige, that one. That was another...
Crikey. Just every horror game, basically, it just from that point.
It inspired so much, and it was literally a demo. A small ass demo, and it inspired so much stuff, right? That's how much, you know, I had love for what he did there, because he basically breathed life into the horror game genre, you know. Up until then, the cinematic horror game genre had kind of been flagging a bit, didn't it, you know?
I totally agree. Like, I tell you what, there is a YouTuber I can recommend if you like your horror games, and if you like somebody that really breaks those games down as well, from a technical perspective as well. I'd actually recommend watching John Wolfe on YouTube. He's really, really good. I've quite enjoyed a lot of his content, and he has a really, whenever he completes the horror game, you know, right at the end, he always he gives it a bit of an analytical breakdown, the kind of the bits he enjoyed, the bits he didn't enjoy so much. And I love how dry he is and how savage he gets with some of the games. Cause he's like, no, it's the bit where the door locks and then a ghost bangs on the door. The thing I saw in PT 5 years ago, and they're still doing it. You know,
that's the thing, right? It's innovation for the time, but innovation has to keep moving even after that. Right.
Yeah. It's like the law of diminishing returns though. Right.
Yeah.
The tricks of the trade that we used in PT have been used so many times by indie devs now
it's
boring now, and you've just seen it a million times.
It has been a crutch, right, for a lot of developers for a long time.
It has, in the absence of any original ideas, it's just let's make a PT clone because it's...
Well, what I quite like easy. About this dude and this dude's content, I have to see some videos he's done on Silent Hill. Silent Hill was really good. And he's done three videos on Silent Hill. He's done the Silent Hill that everyone hated, the Silent Hill that everyone really hated, and he's also done one on The Room as well, because The Room is a really controversial Silent Hill game, I think.
Very divisive, The Room. I was on the side. I didn't like The Room.
I liked The Room, so I'm on the opposite side to you.
Yeah.
But it is very interesting because The Room had a lot of interesting concepts, and it was, in all intents and purposes, the last one made by the original team. You know,
so it
is the last true Silent Hill we ever had in its core. But he also spoke about Homecoming and Downpour as well. I think that Downpour is better than Homecoming, personally.
So I haven't played Downpour. I have played Homecoming.
Okay, yeah. So I think Downpour is better.
All I have is the experience I had with Homecoming, which was
I think Homecoming is worse. The endings for Homecoming, I never liked the endings for Homecoming. None of them really feel good or thought out or anything like that. And I think Downpour's endings do suffer a little bit as well, but I think on the whole, they're a lot better. And I think just what they were trying to do with Downpour, I think, was a little bit more faithful in today's spaces as well. You know?
Yeah, I can agree with that. Like, from Homecoming, I think there's maybe five endings or something like that.
Yeah.
But all of it is just a combination of, did you forgive mum and dad, basically.
Yeah. None of them really feel...
A combination of those, right?
Yeah, like there's one in Homecoming, isn't there? Yeah, one ending where you just literally get drowned, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's it. But there's no context. There's no real context. It basically, everything else didn't really happen in it. It's sort of like you just get that and that's it, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. I think the most enjoyable ending. It's a little sadistic, but I like the one where you become a pyramid head. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that is kind of cool. That's kind of cool.
You kind of see almost how that ritual takes place.
I do have mixed emotions about that, but that's only I think because I love two so much.
Yes,
because obviously, right? You know yourself, right? Silent Hill pyramid head is a manifestation of James' guilt, right? In the second one,
correct?
Yeah. That doesn't mean more pyramid heads should technically be allowed to exist, if you know what I mean? Because everyone interprets Silent Hill in their own way, don't they?
Everybody's got their own personal demons, haven't they? Right?
And the joy of Silent Hill is it changes to affect your demons and how what you've done basically to deserve being there. Because it is sort of like purgatory, isn't it? So for them to be more pyramid heads, it's sort of like when you get a horror film and you get like eight of them, you know, like Hellraiser. Hellraiser went off the fucking edge, right? Because there were so many fucking films.
But yeah.
It's sort of like, this is, you know, Pyramid Head again and again and again. And it's like, he already had his time and he was perfectly fine then. You know what I mean? But I do agree. It is one of the more interesting endings because the bathroom one is shit. It's a shockingly shit engine.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Like it doesn't give any kind of, you know, clarity or any kind of, you know, anything. It doesn't bring anything to it.
And the combat was very mediocre as well. Like from a gameplay perspective, Homecoming wasn't a very enjoyable game.
It wasn't in general, at all. Like I think people who hate on Downpour need to play Homecoming because I think Homecoming is a lot worse.
The combat's always been clunky, but it's not even clunky. It's just very, very standard. There's nothing exceptional or bad about
it.
Just very, very mediocre. That's all I can... Very forgettable is how I can describe Homecoming in a nutshell.
It's just... Yeah, like you said, right? It's just as it is, right?
It has no impact, you know? It doesn't... Like, two has impact.
Mate, two has...
Three has impact.
Massive impact, right? Like,
yeah.
Two hits you... In the fucking pits, mate. It punches you in the chest, doesn't it?
Yes.
With the impact, mate, of that game. Same three as well. And I still think the Reap has its moments where it does that also. I think one of the biggest critiques about the Room people say is the protagonist is a little bit shit in the Room. but the actual stories that are told in the Room, in the game, are really good. But the protagonist is a bit crap. Like he leaves a lot to be desired, like compared to the protagonists of the other games, and even Downpour's protagonist, which is saying something.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that level, you know. But no, he does some really good, like, interesting videos about it. I'll send you some, man, to have a little look at, see what you think.
I've got some Silent Hill videos I can send you as well, actually. Yeah,
We trade Silent Hill stuff. This is how we live now, man. This is how I live without a new Silent Hill game, you know?
Yeah.
You just have to watch your content, play the old content and just hope it comes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just hope it comes, man. But anyway, thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in to another Ramble session. It's been great. Awesome talking about Steam Deck today. Awesome talking about a bit of news. You know, fingers crossed we've got some more cool stuff coming soon.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
All right, my dudes. Thank you so much for listening. Take care. We'll see you again very soon.
Until next time. Bye.
Bye.